Crikey. It's crazy. And we have to recite them every fortnight. The nuns have even more. So we have 227 rules. We have to recite them every fortnight. So we have to memorize them in Pali. I told you we were all fools, right? Yeah, we call the Padimokkha. So we recite the Padimokkha every fortnight. And when we do that, one of the things, we confess any offenses that we might have had. And I know when people think about these things, they think, oh, you know, it's really kind of tough and it's really hard and things like that. But actually, it's really astonishing, really, to think how the Buddha organized things. And in the way that he organized the community and so on, it's really, really incredible. I mean, we were talking about a time when you know, decapitation and torture and all of these things were normal punishments, right? But like, there's like no decapitation in the monastery, like seriously, like hardly ever, right? And and in the majority of cases, if you do something wrong, then you go and you confess it to another monk. And just also to notice, because I came from a Catholic background, you have a confessional and Catholic background, but one difference is that with the community is that we don't have like somebody who's higher up that we confess to. We just confess to each other, right? And so everyone's on the same level. And in the Vinaya, everybody's on the same level. It's in our monastic code. So you just confess if you've done something wrong. And then in the vast majority of cases, then you just confess it, and then that's okay. And you say, Sadhu Suttu Avaso Sangari Sami. Say, it's good. In the future, I'll try to do better. Yeah, that's all. Yeah. So it's a matter of acknowledging it and trying to do better in the future. And so we take this as a training, and we try to live together in the way that's harmonious and supportive. And at the end of the rains retreat, one of the other things that we do is we do what we call a pawarana ceremony. So pawarana, we invite each other for admonition, and so that's like a way of opening up to be able to tell, to speak to each other if we've done something wrong. So these things that we do in the sangha, they don't work perfectly. Of course, it's possible, again, if you have a bad faith actor, that they can take advantage of these things and they can act in the wrong way. This is quite possible. But there's something about it, you know. We've been doing this for 2,500 years, right? I mean, that's our code of conduct. You've probably, in your workplace or whatever, you've probably got a code of conduct, right? And you probably have to, like, revise it every couple of years. And it's probably getting close to 227 rules by now. More? Yeah. So ours has been there for a long time. And so, yeah, of course, some of the things in there are outdated, and some of them, you know, we can game them if you want and so on. But there's something about that. 2,500 years to keep that community and that tradition going. It's really pretty amazing. And so there's something to that the flexibility and to the balance that the Buddha brought into into the way that he organized the monastic community, that really helps helps us to adapt and to be able to live in those different kinds of situations. So living in a monastery for 3 months, basically we stay there and we don't really leave. So you're trapped in there with this it's like being in a cage of fools, right, for 3 months. Not really. I'm just exaggerating for dramatic effect. but one thing, you know, it's a curious way to do it. I mean, monasteries aren't all the same. It's one thing you have to understand. And the way that monks and nuns live their lives is different in different places. So there's not one way of doing it. But the way that it's done at Bodhnyana is that there's very much emphasis on solitude. So you can be in the same monastery as people for 3 months and hardly even see them or talk to them, which in some cases is excellent. but in other cases it's not, because it can easily mean that you just ignore problems and you know you can have resentments and things like that. So that's why we have some of these ceremonies, to try to clear the air if there are any of these things. And so what we try to do is to cultivate a community where there's some kind of harmony and some kind of understanding and some kind of wisdom. and some kind of integrity. And that idea of integrity is, I think, what really distinguishes somebody who's a fool from somebody who's wise, in the Buddhist sense, right? So like I said, it's not about IQ, it's not about education, it's not about book learning or any of those kinds of things. Right? It's about having some kind of integrity and some kind of sense that, what do we mean by integrity, right? What I mean by that is something like that we live in accordance with our values, right? We live in accordance with our values. And so it's very easy in we can learn some Buddhism and we can spout different kinds of values and we can talk about compassion and we can talk about letting go and we can talk about these kinds of things. But then actually living in accordance with these things is what really matters. And that's not something that is just one and done. It's not just something like even as monks or as nuns that we just do it and then suddenly we live in accordance with the Dhamma. The form that we have, the monastic form that we have, gives us a structure that supports us and encourages us to live in accordance with Dhamma, but it doesn't solve the problems for us. It doesn't make us somehow know the answer to all of the questions that we need to know. So we need to keep on coming back to that thing. How do we act with integrity? And those values that we hold dear in Buddhism, the values of kindness and compassion and letting go, how can we implement them and practice them in every aspect of our life? And before I asked, again, a bit tongue-in-cheek about that idea of, you know, practice in day-to-day life or in daily life, I really hate that idiom. I find it very annoying. There are certain things that I find annoying. That's one of them. Umbrellas are another one. I don't like umbrellas, okay? What? I'm allowed to be eccentric? I'm a monk. Okay? So, where were we? Umbrellas, yeah. Because they like, you carry them around all the time and then they get wet. And when you're in the rain, you get wet anyway, right? And then you go out of the rain and you put it and you bring the rain from outside to the inside. I just stopped using them and you walk around in the rain, it's quite fun. I don't know, I quite like it, yeah. Anyway. So living a life of integrity according with your values. So I never carry an umbrella because that's my value, right? Maybe if I lived in England it would be different. So what are those values? And for Buddhists, we have that path, or not even just for Buddhists, but for people who feel inspired to follow the Buddha's path. It doesn't matter if you call yourself a Buddhist or not, it doesn't really matter. I don't care, right? I mean, when it comes census time, then write Buddhist down, okay? But it's all right. But apart from that, it doesn't really matter. Right? But what matters is that we live according to the Buddha's path, and we live especially according to the Eightfold Noble Path, right? And the Buddha taught this path. It has called the Eightfold Noble Path, the middle way. The Buddha taught in the first sermon and he taught countless times from then on. So how many people can tell me what are the eight factors of the Noble Eightfold Path? Who knows? Come on, don't be afraid. You should be proud to be able to say. Who doesn't know? Who does? Everyone, you serious? You're my man. Eddie. Okay. What's the number one? Right view. Okay, thank you. Number two? Right intention. Okay, right thought. So right view is, so what's right view is like the understanding or the perspective that we have about things, right? So initially, right view is just an opinion or an idea, right? And that opinion, the essence of it is seeing in terms of the Four Noble Truths. So we understand that suffering is something that we're creating within ourselves, right? That's the basis of the Four Noble Truths, and it's the basis of right view. So then right intention, right? So acting out of kindness, acting out of compassion, acting out of letting go, acting out of generosity. So it's about how do we behave? How do we actually move from our understanding into the world, right? And that's where again that aspect of integrity comes in, because our intention comes from our understanding, right? These things are in line; they follow from one another. And in our spiritual practice, we need to keep on asking that. So, for example, let's say we get angry, right? So when you get angry with someone, you don't think to yourself, oh, that's bad. I'm a Buddhist. I shouldn't get bad. I shouldn't get angry. I'm a meditator, right? I shouldn't get angry, right? That's not the point. The point is that we look at it and we ask, why is that? Why is that we believe this thing? We believe in the values of kindness and of love and of acceptance and of compassion, and yet we still act in that way, right? And that's because that integration has not yet happened deeply enough, that we're not fully acting from our beliefs. And so we investigate that, we understand it, and we sadhusuttu sangvarisami, we do better next time. Okay, so intention, what's the next one? Speech. You see, I don't know. I'm beginning to question your fundamental level of integrity here, because you all told me that you didn't know these things, and now it turns out that some of you do know it. I don't know quite what's going on, but anyway, speech. Fair enough. Right speech, not lying, not bullying speech, right? Harsh speech, these kinds of things, and so we try to do better. But again, don't be afraid to speak, okay? Right speech isn't no speech, okay? And, I mean, sometimes it's no speech, right? But right speech is actually doing something. Don't be afraid to speak. And this is one of the things which we really, really I beg you to do as people whose lives are informed by the Dhamma. Speak more. Be obnoxious a little bit, right? Don't be afraid to express your views and express the views of Dhamma, because Dhamma is really beautiful and really powerful, and the world needs some bloody wisdom. And some damn compassion. Right? So don't be afraid to stand up for the values of Dhamma at times when you really need to, right? And so we act out of those things. Okay, so right speech. What's the next one? Action. Right action. So what's the right action? No killing. Damn! Well, there goes the rest of my evening. Okay, no killing, stealing, and sexual misconduct. Okay, so these are like the basics. But what it really means is that the way we physically act, right? So speech is about our verbal actions. This one, right action, is about our physical acts. Don't do our physical acts. Are they in line with our views and with our intentions, right? So are we acting in a way that has integrity? If we believe that we shouldn't be harming others, are we doing things in our life that's bringing harm to others? Okay. And so this is something for us to investigate and to reflect on, okay? And so if we are acting in a way that's harming the environment, right, then this is a kind of wrong action. If we're acting in a way that's harming animals, then this is a kind of wrong action. If we're acting in a way that's harming, we live in a very globalized society. Now remember, this is quite different than it was in the Buddha's day. In the Buddha's day, your actions were usually quite confined to a close area, right? You know, it was things that you might do might affect the animals around you, the people around you, in just your local environment. But these days, because we live in such a globalized and interconnected world, that all of the choices that we make affect things on a much greater scale, right? So if we buy a bag of coffee, then is that fair trade coffee? Are we contributing to slavery and to environmental destruction by the things that we buy? Right? So these are things which are ethical considerations, and they're all part of right action. And so we should constantly be checking that, and we should constantly be asking, you know, how can we do better? And sometimes I'm sorry to say, but sometimes Buddhists have a bit of a kind of an attitude to say, well, the Buddha didn't ban it, right? Therefore, I can get away with it. I mean, come on, do better, right? You're not a teenager, right? Yeah? Don't drink the alcohol out of the cabinet, okay? You come back, the kid's drunk, you say, well, the alcohol wasn't in the cabinet, it was next door to it, you know? You didn't tell me I couldn't drink that one, right? You know, grow up a bit, have a bit of responsibility, right? Recognize that the simple ethical precepts that the Buddha taught were a basic minimum for a much simpler society. And our world is much more complicated, it's much more ramified. And especially because of technology, right? The things that we do have a much greater effect, right? I mean, technology is basically just sticks. That's all it is. The original technology is a stick. And with a stick, you can, whatever, pull things out of the ground or do things a bit more than you can with your hand. And then you get a bigger stick and a bigger stick, right? And the more and more you have technology, the more you have a power to act on the world around you, and the more that our choices will affect things outside of ourselves, right? And so we have that, we have through society, we have a greater capacity to affect and to change things through our actions, and that means that we have a greater responsibility to be careful and to be compassionate. But also, not just to act, not just be careful and compassionate, but also to inform ourselves so that we know what the effects of our actions are. Right? This is all part of that right action. So don't think, oh, okay, I've kept my precepts today, more or less. I haven't stolen from anyone except for the people who deserve it. So there's a bit of wiggle room there. Right? So always be challenging yourself. You think, how can I do better? Right? How can I create less harm? How can I help people more? Right? And we can always do a bit more to help people. So that's right action. What's the next one? Right livelihood, right? So right livelihood is your job. Okay? And this is a huge deal in Buddhism. Like, it's so weird, right? How many times in Buddhism and Dharma practice and things do we say when we talk about our practice, right? And by practice we mean sitting and meditating. Oh, I couldn't. My practice is going really bad because I've got too much work to do. Right? No. That's one of the factors of the Eightfold Path. Yeah? What you do in your job is every bit as much part of the Eightfold Path as right mindfulness. It's every bit as much of the Eightfold Path as right view. Okay? So don't think it's just studying Dharma, listening to Dharma talks, doing meditation, that's your practice. Your job is your practice. That is the Eightfold Path. That's one of the factors of the Eightfold Path. So put some effort into it. Put some thought and care into it. And ask yourself, is this job a good thing? Right? Am I helping people by doing this job? Yeah? The Buddha said there are certain kinds of livelihood that are very harmful, yeah, like trading in weapons or in poisons and these kinds of things. But then there are we can do other jobs that may be kind of neutral, right? There are other jobs that are good, right? You can do like crafts, for example, and trades where you're like, you know, helping people. If you're a plumber, it's a good job. People can turn on the tap and they get water, right? If you're a driver, it's a good job. You get people to where they need to go. So these are jobs you actually help people. And then there are other jobs that are a bit more dubious. What about advertising, for example? Right? Is that right livelihood? I mean, if the entire advertising industry was to disappear tomorrow, would the world be a worse place? I don't think so. I think it would be a much better place. Yeah? But again, it's relative, right? I was in KL and someone picked me up from the airport or something, and we were driving and asked them about that and about their job, and they said, oh, they were in advertising, and probably my face fell, and I'm like, oh, that's very good. He said, no, he said, don't worry. He said, he works for the government, he's in a company, but they're contracting, they're working for the government in making the government healthcare programs available to people and to informing people about the healthcare programs and what their rights are and so on. So I thought, okay, fair enough. That's all right, isn't it? That's pretty good. So that's something like advertising. It can be good, but it depends on how you use it, right? So this is something for you to tell. Don't let your job become a soulless nightmare for you, right? Don't get trapped into it, right? exercise some choice. Understand that yes, you can make a difference. And it might be something as small as just being kinder to the people in your office. Right? It may be something as small as supporting making the office a bit greener and having, you know, reducing the power bills and so on. Right? So all of these are things that we can do to try to contribute to practice right livelihood. Okay, so then we have right effort. It means we make an effort in meditation. Right, mindfulness is being mindful. Sorry, that wasn't very good. Right, mindfulness is... No, I'm just conscious we're getting near the end. So right, mindfulness is keeping a continuity of awareness in the present. And right, samadhi is deep meditation. Right? And so this is where we're getting into the more focused and spiritual and meditative parts of the Eightfold Path. And so this whole practice of the Eightfold Path is a path of letting go. Right, and so some of the topics that we mentioned before, topics like letting go, serenity, compassion, these are values that inform the entire structure of the Eightfold Path. Right, all of those different factors are all about letting go. They're all about finding peace. They're all about compassion and kindness. But when we think about it in terms of the Eightfold Path, don't just think of the Eightfold Path as being some kind of nice or noble idea which we can put on a pedestal and say, oh yes, we try to follow the Eightfold Path, right? Think of each of those individual factors, right? And ask yourself, am I doing as well as I can in that area, right? Am I practicing my right speech as best as I can? And then you think about it. Oh, I had that interaction. I said those nasty words. I did this. I did that. You think, well, how can I do better? Maybe I need to ask forgiveness from that person, right? Maybe I just need to make sure that next time I speak more kindly. Right? And so use this framework. Use it to help you. Ask yourself, you know, what am I doing in my job that I can be doing better? Right? Have I been treating the people that I'm working with as kindly as I can? Yeah. And you know, one of my jobs, right, my day job, if you like, is I run the website sort of central for Buddhist scriptures. And so we have an international team and we work together with people to both volunteers and also paid contractors to make the Buddhist scriptures available to everyone all around the world in their own language. And we had, last year, we rebuilt the website and we did that with a firm in Poland, STX Next. So shout out to STX Next. Hi guys, if you're listening, free plug for you there. You can take 10% off the bill this month, only kidding. But we did this job for them and it was really lovely and it was actually really nice to work with these people. And at the end of it, one of the manager, Gosha, wrote this a post or this account of her experience working with us and doing this project. And she said it was the most amazing experience that she'd had in her career. And, you know, she felt that, she, you know, she wasn't a Buddhist or anything, but it was just, it felt like such a blessing for her to be able to do this work with people who were acting with integrity, right? We were doing something that was valuable to us, but also we brought those values to how we did the project. We always treat people with respect. We treat people with kindness. If someone's sick and takes a day off, you say, sure, take a day off. You know, we're not haranguing people for deadlines. We're always trying to relate to people with kindness and respect and to bring the values that we find in our Buddhist teachings to the way that we act with people. It doesn't mean we always do that perfectly, but it means we keep trying to do better. And that's what it means to act with integrity, and that's what it means to not be a fool. Okay? So don't be afraid in your life if you get into situations where you find that there's just these idiots who are just distracting you from things. It's okay to say, just steer your way around it. Of course, sometimes you can't, right? I understand that. But sometimes you can, right? So where you can, it's all right. It's not a matter of dismissing people or saying that they're hopeless. It's a matter of saying they need time to grow, right? And meanwhile, you need to get on with your life and you can accomplish amazing things. But you can't accomplish those things if you're constantly sort of fighting rearguard actions with people who are pulling you back. Yeah, So always this is something which in my life I've tried to follow and tried to say, well, the things that I want to do, even that I want to do as a monk, what are the things that I can do that I can actually make a difference, that I can really contribute? You know, I feel like I've got so much of value from the Dhamma. You know, it's completely changed my life, obviously. But how can I repay that? How can I serve the Dhamma? How can I serve the Buddhist community in a way that's going to be effective and useful and meaningful? Right? And so we keep on asking ourselves those questions and we keep on trying to do better next time. And who knows? Maybe sometimes the people we thought were fools and then they turned around and actually they're the Buddha in disguise. Just giving us a test. Maybe. It does happen. Yeah? But don't give yourself too much grief if you need to say, look, I'm sorry, this isn't working and you need to move ahead. It's all right. Even the Buddha couldn't solve all of these problems. Yeah, and there's one thing, you know, I mentioned that monasteries are full of fools. And this isn't just modern monasteries. It was the same in the time of the Buddha, right? And, you know, you read in the suttas, you read all about these beautiful, you know, monks and nuns and, you know, Sariputta and Upalavana and all of these people who did these amazing things. But there's a lot of idiots who joined the Sangha, you know, in those days. Some of the stories there are very outrageous. In fact, they're so outrageous I can't even begin to tell them to you because they would just be too entertaining. And one time somebody asks that, and he was a horse trainer, and he said to the Buddha, he said, what do you do sometimes if you can't train your monks? And the Buddha said to him, well, what do you do if you can't train your horses? And he said, well, you know, sometimes I just have to put them down. And the Buddha said, yeah, that's what I do with my monks too. When they're just too hopeless, I just have to put them down. He's like, what? I thought you were all about that non-violence and stuff. No, I said, no, sometimes you have to expel people from the monastery, right? And you just have to say, sorry, I can't help you. Right? That's the Buddha. The Buddha would admit that sometimes he can't help people. Yeah? Again, it doesn't mean that a person's lost or hopeless, right? It just means they're not in a place where they're going to benefit right now. And so you just can't allow yourself to get stuck in that. So just remember that. Even the Buddha said it's okay. And so this is what the Buddha meant when he was talking about asevana cha balanang. So hopefully in your lives you don't have too many fools. But if you do encounter them, don't be afraid to, it's okay to just step the other way sometimes. So anyway, this is my little talk for you this evening on asevana cha balanang. And I don't know if we have any time for any questions or anything like that. Do we have questions? We have an iPod. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good. Excellent. So are we having questions on the iPod or questions from the floor? We have a question on the floor here.
How does foolishness fit in with, say, non-self? If, you know, basically there aren't really any true egos or selves, how does rejecting or judging people as fools fit in with that concept? Because it's a bit inconsistent unless you just have to assume people are egos while you go about this full type discussion and then...
Right. Well, someone who, if they're acting like in that kind of foolish way, they're usually coming from the sense of ego, right? So that's why they're doing it. There's a sense of conceit and things like that behind it. And this is one of the reasons why you can't reason with fools, right? This is the problem. Again, it doesn't mean that they're unintelligent or anything like that, but it means that the actual thing that they're talking about is not the thing that really matters. And the thing that really matters is some kind of underlying psychological need or impulse or something like that. And you can't necessarily solve that at that time, so it's just recognizing that that's the case. Yeah. So that's all it is. It's just about recognizing that there are limits. Yeah. That's all. Okay. Yes, let's get some things. Thank you so very much. Okay, so a few questions from our international audience. Hello, everyone around the world. How's it all going? I hope things are doing well for you. So Jeff from New Zealand Hey Jeff, how's things down in New Zealand? I'm jealous of your Prime Minister. Okay, when does when does one know the difference between entertainment peaching? That means like fruit picking for peaches? No. Peaching. Entertainment peaching? Preaching. I don't know. Preaching, I think, and self-absorption when watching these talks. Okay, a difference between entertainment, preaching, and self-absorption when watching these talks. So how much of these talks... All right, okay, so how much of this talk is entertainment, how much is preaching, and how much is self-absorption when watching these talks? I really don't know. I don't know. I don't watch them. I just give them. Oh, if there's something useful, then take that what's useful. If there's nothing useful, then leave it behind, I guess. That's all that really matters. If you think that my talk's too entertaining, I can certainly give much more boring ones. Okay. Wei Yi, I hope I got that right, from the US. Most of our speech is not right speech. Most of our speech is not right speech. Well, Wei Yi, speak for yourself. A lot of negativities. I'm sorry, okay, I'm only messing with you. I'm only kidding. It's just my sense of humor, okay? Okay, so a lot of negativities. Should we even talk? Right. Well, sometimes no, but then not talking is also a kind of speech. This is the thing. Unfortunately, we live in the human realm, and in the human realm, we have societies, and those societies depend on communication. And not speaking is a form of communication. I want you to be really clear about this. I mentioned a little while ago about the recitation of the rules for the monks and nuns we do every fortnight. Right. Now, before that recitation, the reciter says, if there are any rules which you've broken, right, you should declare them. And if you don't declare them, then that is false speech. You're lying, right? By remaining silent, you are lying. Okay? So not saying anything is a form of speech, and it can be a form of wrong speech. So the thing to do is to speak, how do we speak at the right time, and how do we say the right things? And this takes judgment, it takes wisdom. Okay, and you will make mistakes. And this is also, I think, this is really important. Don't be afraid to make mistakes. Right? Don't be afraid to say the wrong thing. It's okay. Say the wrong thing. And then if you get pulled up for it, then you say, oh, I'm sorry. Please forgive me. I'll try to do better. Right? You don't have to give some long-winded justification or something for it, but show that you're willing to change and do better. And that is really important behavior. Right? It's important not just that you show that you speak, that use right speech. It's important that you model the behavior for others, that it's okay to be wrong. Okay? And you show them, yes, you're right. I spoke out of anger. I spoke too hastily. I shouldn't have said that. Please forgive me. I'll do better next time. Right? That way, you're showing everybody that that's how we should respond. Now, one of the things that we do in with our website is we run a forum, and we have very wonderful moderators who help out with that forum. So shout out to all our moderators. Hey guys, how's it going? If you're listening, and they do an amazing job. And this is one of the key things that we do when we're moderating the forums, right? If someone says something wrong, you call them out for it, and you say, well, this one was offensive or something like that, and then you see how they respond, right? And most cases, a lot of cases, people then get angry, blah, 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 why did you do this, these kinds of things. That's how you know the trolls, right? Because they get upset. Right? And the ones who are really sincere, they say, oh, look, I'm so sorry, I shouldn't have said that. And you're like, okay, that's fine. That's the difference, right? So don't be afraid to speak, and don't be afraid to make mistakes, right? And don't underestimate your own wisdom. If you even have a little bit of Dhamma, then that Dhamma is really beautiful wisdom, and a lot of people will benefit from it. Alan Brown from Scotland. Hey, Alan, how's it going? Can I explain in detail what is meant by sexual misconduct as a part of the Eightfold Path? Like, Like, exactly how many details do you want, Alan? We could be here for quite some time. Right, now, okay. So, come back to that question of integrity and values, right? So we began that. So the Eightfold Path means ways of acting that is an expression of the values of right view. And so it means that in sexual conduct that we avoid those kinds of actions. Essentially, we avoid actions that cause harm. And those include things like non-consensual sexual activity. It includes things like underage sexual activity. It includes things like betraying people, obviously, right? But it doesn't, it's not about plumbing, okay? So it's not about who sticks what where, okay? That's not like part of sexual ethics in Buddhism, right? And so I know that sometimes people get very worked up about these kinds of things, and there's certain kinds of configurations that are acceptable and certain other kinds that are not acceptable, right? And so the Buddha never really talked about that, okay? Who cares, right? Get your freak on. I don't really care, right? But the point is who are you harming, right? And that's what matters in terms of sexual misconduct, right? So where the point being that when you enter into a sexual relationship with somebody that there's a lot of closeness and a lot of intimacy and a lot of share, a lot of potential for harm and distress and trauma. And, you know, we've seen that playing out in so many ways, right? We've seen the sexual abuse cases and all of these kinds of things, right? And so all of this, yes, that's all sexual misconduct, right? So, always be very careful and always, those questions of consent and these kinds of things. And I want you to be really clear about this, right? So for example, like consent. Now, consent is something that we talk about a lot these days, and it's almost like, you know, people, one of the things which I find is so ridiculous is people say, oh, you know, these days consent is a thing, but, you know, these guys, they brought up in the 80s, you know, and no one talked about it then. I'm like, no, I was brought up in the 80s, right? And I knew that, right? I mean, this is ridiculous, the idea that somehow until like 5 years ago, no one knew that rape was wrong. I mean, come on, right? Of course, consent is important, and consent is explicitly and repeatedly mentioned in the Buddhist discussions of sexuality. And these kinds of things, if you want details, right, you look in the Vinaya, especially the first rule for monks is a Parajika one about sexual conduct, and that goes into a lot of detail, right? Too much detail in many cases. So much detail that actually when the Vinaya was first translated, that a lot of it was translated into Latin, like rather than English, because like kids weren't supposed to be reading it. You had to be grown up to read it. So, yeah. So if you want all of the funky details, you can have a look in there. And it does go into a lot of details. And one of the things that comes up again and again is that issue of consent. And this is quite explicitly mentioned and quite emphasized right there in the earliest Buddhist texts about sexuality, right? And so, say, for monks and nuns, and we've chosen to live a celibate lifestyle, and so if we have sex, then this is a very important transgression for us. But if it's not consensual, then there's no offense, right? If we don't give our consent, then there's no offense. So, and this is mentioned repeatedly and is a very, very well understood part of our training. So 2,500 years ago, right, people understood this notion of consent very well. Right? It's not that we've just sort of started to understand it these days, right? So don't listen to all of this rubbish about, in those days people didn't know anything. Complete rubbish. Okay, so sexual conduct has a uniquely strong ability to create harm if it's misused because of the intimacy and the closeness and all of those things. And so it's an area of human conduct that we need to use a lot of care and a lot of compassion, a lot of kindness, and we need to make sure that our sexual conduct isn't going to be used in a way that's going to hurt anybody. Okay, so that's what sexual misconduct is about. All right, so thanks for those questions, and I think that's it for tonight, right? So just a reminder, tomorrow we'll be on, so we have the dana tomorrow and the, we have a meditation class? I think meditation class in the afternoon and KM groups on tomorrow evening. But on Sunday we won't be here, so Sunday we'll be down at the monastery for the Katina time. So please do come down for the Katina at Bodhinyana this weekend and Dhammasara the following weekend. And I'll be off soon, so bye-bye. I'm leaving in the middle of next week, and it's been nice seeing you, and hopefully see you again. And maybe if you're in Sydney, then we can meet then. Okay, let's pay respects to the Triple Gem.